Keir Starmer has said new legislation will deliver the biggest levelling up of renters' rights in a generation in England. BBC News.
With Jane Steele. A new series of Paul Sinha's Perfect Pub Quiz will be with us before long, so why don't we, in a few moments, hone our quizzing skills with an episode from the first series recorded in 2022. That's coming up in a few moments.
On BBC Radio 4, the new book from the best-selling author Ben McIntyre.
The intruders were threatening to destroy the embassy and everyone in it.
The inside story of the 1980 storming of the Iranian embassy in London.
To prepare for a possible assault, the SAS needed to understand every inch of the interior. So they built a replica embassy, twice. The assault would follow the yellow card rule. Anyone can fire so long as your life is threatened.
The Siege by Ben McIntyre.
Who dares wins.
On Radio 4 and BBC Sounds. Next Monday to Friday morning at 11:45.
Comedy now on Radio 4.
Geography and history and music, films and telly. Everyone who's ever lived from Taylor Swift to Botticelli. What a fun packed evening this is. Welcome to Paul Sinha's Perfect Pub Quiz.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and once more, thanks for that warm applause. And welcome to another episode of Paul Sinha's Perfect Pub Quiz, which I, comedian and quizzer Paul Sinha, work with you, the audience, to prove that the Perfect Pub Quiz doesn't just have questions you know the answer to, but also allows you to leave the pub a more knowledgeable person. We were planning to have three online verifications for every fact, but we've been advised to stick to new 2022 government regulations that state quite clearly that a fact is only a fact if it has been fully established by Sue Gray. So for the purpose of this show, we're all at a pub quiz. I'm your host, and to keep me on side, all of you would have had to show some imagination with the name of your team. Because there appear to be various broad categories of pub quiz team names. One of the most common is a decidedly half-hearted pun on a recent news story. So in my head, one of the teams tonight is called Prince Andrew's Pizza Express Doughballs. Sorry, Andrew. The second category of team name is perhaps the one I most approve of. Short, factual, and attempting no joke whatsoever. So welcome tonight to Friends of Pat, the physiotherapists, and we really need this night out and therefore we haven't taken an NFT this morning. That wasn't aimed at anyone in this audience. You're all welcome. The third category is teams attempting a pun on the term quiz team. By far the most common of these is Quiz Team Aguilera. Yes, I'm agree with you with your moaning there. It is now 8 years since Christina Aguilera had a hit single in the United Kingdom. Other options are available. You could go for Quiz Team Ohurugu, whose crowning achievement was winning Olympic gold in Beijing in 2008, or Quiz Team Hamilton, whose crowning achievement is somehow not being the worst person in a marriage. Or you could go for the 17th century Swedish monarch, Queen Quiztima. Not only one of the most influential women in history, but the woman who indirectly caused the death of the man considered the founder of modern Western philosophy. Does anyone know his name?
Voltaire.
Descartes.
It's René Descartes, that's correct. Well done, give him a round of applause. René Descartes, a century before Voltaire, and Europe's first great modern philosopher. He was having a perfectly happy existence, at least by the standards of a philosopher, before he was persuaded by the Queen of Sweden to tutor her in the philosophy of love. The lessons were in a damp medieval castle, in the middle of a cold Swedish winter, at 5 a.m. After what is thought to be no more than five lessons, René Descartes had perished of pneumonia. There have been other theories about his death. Maybe it wasn't the cold, maybe it was him finding out that come and teach me lessons in love at 5 a.m. was not actually a euphemism. But this is the correct theory, I think, therefore I am standing by it. Take and leave the ones you like. One can, of course, take the male approach and name your team Quiz Timano Ronaldo, after the man who is definitively the second finest footballer of his generation. Can anyone tell me what Cristiano Ronaldo has in common with a teddy bear?
Bad statues?
No? No one? The answer is the obvious. They're both a lot of fun to cuddle. And my lifetime ban from Old Trafford was worth it to prove it. But actually, lesser known is they're both named after presidents of the United States. I mean, I say lesser known, I think everybody knows that the teddy bear is named after Theodore Roosevelt. But Cristiano Ronaldo was named after Ronald Reagan.
No.
Absolutely, yes. Well, you should learn not to doubt me by now. His father was a huge admirer of Ronald Reagan. His charisma, his ruthless foreign policy, his uncompromising attitude to Cold War realpolitik. Nope, it was his films. It turns out that Cristiano Ronaldo is so named because his father is an idiot. The final category of team name is those who don't have the energy to make a pun on quiz team and simply make a pun on the word quiz. There's no quizness like show quizness. Little quiz sunshine. Quiz on my face. And the inexplicably popular Quizlamic Jihad. I'd like to propose a new one to this list. Quizabella Rossellini. Because the actress Isabella Rossellini is something of a gift to quiz writers. For a start, who is her famous triple Oscar-winning mother? That is right, Ingrid Bergman, a triple Oscar winner. I love the fact that two of her Oscars for Gaslight and Murder on the Orient Express, a film about gaslighting, and a film whose alternative title was Murder? What murder? There's absolutely nothing to see here. Rossellini was married to Martin Scorsese and had a long-term relationship with David Lynch and Gary Oldman. I can only imagine the number of times Isabella Rossellini may have said, maybe next time do a comedy. But the main reason I'm suggesting a team call themselves Quizabella Rossellini is we actually know she's a big fan of wordplay. But does anyone here know what thing or person had a name created by Isabella Rossellini? I certainly wasn't expecting anyone to get this, because the answer, would you believe, is the actress Layla Morse. Big Mo from EastEnders. Genuinely, if you're wondering how the actress who played Big Mo in EastEnders got a stage name from a glamorous European-born screen icon, well, Layla Morse's real surname is... Oldman. A surname she shares with her brother... Gary Oldman, the former long-term partner of Isabella Rossellini. Rossellini always used to refer to her as Mia Sorella, not because she couldn't remember her name, but because Mia Sorella is the Italian translation of my sister. When choosing a stage name to launch her own acting career, Maureen Oldman listened to the sage advice of her brother's girlfriend, who suggested she rearrange the letters of Mia Sorella to make Layla Morse. It's a good thing that Gary Oldman didn't have an aspiring actor brother, as Mio Fratello rearranges as Ollie Fartmole. And there is already one Ollie Fartmole on Equity. So, now that we've established the need for an end to Quizlamic Jihad and the emergence of Quizabella Rossellini, we now have a selection this week of questions on around the world. Because let's be honest, there are certain pub quizzes that can be a little bit parochial. Questions on motorway junctions, breweries, canals, characters from Biker Grove. If you're too young to remember Biker Grove, you have my sympathies. It's the CBBC version of The Wire. There is, of course, nothing wrong with questions about Britain, but a pub quiz is a good excuse for a setter to remind people that there does exist something called the outside world. Even if, over the last 2 years, we've done a very good job of ignoring it. I was very much reminded of this when hosting a pub quiz in Gosport in Hampshire. I asked the following question. Which country, with a name beginning with the letter I, has the highest Islamic population in the world? Indonesia. Indonesia is correct. But somebody drunkenly staggered to their feet and shouted out at the top of his voice, England! In another pub quiz I hosted, I asked what was unusual about the first woman to circumnavigate the globe. Someone shouted, was she called Lisa Stansfield? One once more know your audience age range. So our first question, tonight is, literally, what was unusual about the first woman to literally go around the world?
She did it in space.
No, she did not do it in space. At that stage, the Queen Elizabeth II had gone on. Not on a balloon, no.
She was really young.
She was quite young.
Did she go the other way around?
No. Anyone else?
Less than 80 days.
Less than 80 days. No, it took her quite a long time. Dressed as a man, we'll come to that. Her name was Jeanne Barrée, and she was a member of Louis Antoine de Bougainville's 18th century circumnavigation of the world. If the name Bougainville rings a bell, it's also the name of a
flower,
as the flower Bougainvillea is named after him. It was in fact Jeanne Barrée who collected the first specimens of bougainvillea in Brazil. But that's not what's unusual about her voyage. What is unusual is she took 3 years longer to complete the journey than the rest of the crew. But she got off in Mauritius to run a tavern for 3 years. She was too busy making a small fortune, saving up the money to get back on her own terms. But more unusual, however, is she was only allowed on the expedition because she was disguised as a man. Very clever, this. She changed the name from Jeanne Barrée, J-E-A-N-N-E, to Jean Barrée, J-E-N. Genius. Her true identity was unveiled when the expedition arrived in Tahiti, and the locals burst into laughter and said, "Oh, look, it's a woman." To which the French crew said, "Oh, no, it isn't." And so began the grand tradition of cross-dressing in Tahitian pantomime. I think the big clue should have been that circumnavigating the globe whilst running a tavern in Mauritius and picking up bougainvillea was a level of multitasking beyond those of the male navigators. Before we go on to the next question, though, we now start the process of taking questions from you, preferably a question about the rest of the world rather than where you left the remote control.
In the 1936 Olympics in Berlin, which two countries turned up and realised that their flags were the same?
Oh. I know one of them is Liechtenstein.
Yes.
the other one, Haiti?
It is Haiti.
Thank you. You're applauding. I cheated there. I overheard him at the front saying Haiti. At least I'm honest about it. At least I'm honest about it. That is a superb question. But Liechtenstein put something on their flag after that. A crown, isn't it? They put a crown on their flag to distinguish them from Haiti. Very much the biggest news story of the 1936 Berlin Olympics.
There are only three countries in the world, or four if you include Kosovo, whose national anthems have no lyrics. One of those is a NATO member and an EU member. Can you name it?
Spain?
Spain is correct. Can you name the other two?
Oh, come on! you actually sat next to my husband who's looking at me, giving me a disapproval. Why can't you name this? Oh, I should know this. Greece?
They are Bosnia and San Marino.
Ah, Bosnia and San Marino. The dream World Cup final. The next question, and it's a puzzle rather than a general knowledge question, so feel free to discuss it amongst yourselves, or you might know it instantly. Which is the only country with a single word name that contains all five vowels?
Mozambique.
Someone's got it very quickly. Give him a round of applause. It is Mozambique. Mozambique has other claims to fame. It is one of nine independent countries where Portuguese is an official language. And does anyone know which of those nine countries is in Asia?
Macau.
Not a country. You've just started a world war with China, and I'm not happy with you. Goa, not a country. You've now brought India into this global conflict.
East Timor,
that is correct. Or to give it its proper name. East Timor. Now, the most remarkable thing about Mozambique, though, is the nature of its flag. What's on its flag? An AK-47. It's an interesting tourist gamble, isn't it? To have as your national emblem the deadliest weapon that humankind has ever known. It is estimated that 250,000 people are killed annually by AK-47s, which makes it officially deadlier than hippopotamuses, crocodiles, landmines, and prematurely telling the nation to eat out to help out. The Kalashnikov has a mixed reputation. The family of Mikhail Kalashnikov have traded on his name to help produce Kalashnikov-branded watches, knives, umbrellas, and genuinely a Kalashnikov-branded vodka whose bottle is in the shape of a rifle. But someone who had his doubts was Mikhail Kalashnikov himself, who wrote the following words shortly before his death in 2013. I keep having the same unsolved question. If my rifle claimed people's lives, then can it be that I, a Christian and an Orthodox believer, was to blame for their deaths? Yes, yes it can. That is certainly a possibility. Before we move on to our next subject, we go back to the audience for some more around the world questions, hopefully.
Very simply, how many countries sit along the equator? And if, and as a bonus, can you name them?
Right, the challenge has been set. Ecuador, Colombia and Brazil.
So you're saying three?
No, 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 not three. Indonesia, that's four. And then there's the ones in... Gabon, Kenya.
Oh, I've lost count already, so how many are you up to? You're up to six, OK.
Gabon, Kenya, the Central African Republic, DRC, Somalia. The Equatorial Guinea's not on the equator. Ecuador is on the equator. Equatorial Guinea's not on the equator. Cape Verde. And... go on, what, tell us the rest.
The answer's 13.
Oh, you got 10.
Oh, 10.
Well, Ecuador, Colombia, Brazil, Sao Tome and Principe, Gabon, Republic of Congo, Democratic Republic of Congo, Uganda, Kenya, Somalia, Maldives, Indonesia and Kiribati.
Kiribati, it's pronounced.
I apologise, sorry.
Thank you very much for that. Thank you for asking me a question with 14 answers. 13 plus the actual 13. Anyway, thank you for that. Back to more questions, and we move on to capital cities. Capital cities have long been a mainstay of the pub quiz, but usually teams have to do little more than name the capital, or country, or indeed US state. This can be a bit unimaginative. Don't get me wrong, I often ask the question, Boston is the capital of which of the United States of America?
Massachusetts.
Thank you for that, but you only get it right if you spell the answer correctly. The worst effort was the pub quiz I hosted in Gosport, where one team answered L-I-N-C-O-L-N-S-H-I-R-E. Give me a cheer if you think you're capable of spelling Massachusetts correctly. I'm not coming to you. I'm coming to you, sir.
Oh, no.
Do it well, letter by letter. And each time you think you've got it right, give me a cheer.
OK, M.
Woo!
A.
Woo!
S. Can you help me out, please?
Yeah,
yes, A.
Yeah.
C.
Yeah.
H. A. U. Keep going, keep going. S. T. E. That'll do.
It's not easy to name 13 things in a row, is it? Yes, it's M-A-S-S-A-C-H-U, single S-E-T-T-S. It's perfect for a pub quiz, and the most teams will confer and eventually get it right. Now that we've established that Boston is the capital of Massachusetts, can anyone tell me what caused the death of 21 people in downtown Boston on January the 15th, 1919?
Molasses.
Yeah, that is very good. The answer, ridiculously, is molasses. Or to be specific, a tidal wave of molasses leaking from a lorry transporting molasses turned into the unlikeliest portmanteau word of all time. A molassica. First the tea party, then this. Please, Boston, I beg you, just have one historical event that doesn't involve unforgivable food wastage. A nice easy one next. In terms of capital cities, what do Brazil, Pakistan and Australia have in common? They were all planned capitals, yeah. They were all built to be the capital of the country. If you're stuck in traffic listening to this in Canberra, this was meant to happen. Which capital city's name is an anagram of a totally different country? There you go, give him a round of applause. Lima, the capital of Peru, is an anagram of Mali. And you get a question now on Lima. What is Lima syndrome? Anyone?
Being captured by a posh family in West London. And
you're not exactly miles off. It's the opposite of Stockholm syndrome, which the kidnappers or terrorists start developing sympathy or admiration for their victims. Although it was first identified in 1996, it was first seen on December the 24th, 1988, when Hans Gruber missed at least 11 straightforward opportunities to kill John McClane. After developing a grudging respect for his nemesis. This might be Lima syndrome, or it might be the fact that he had a touch of Christmas spirit, induced with it being a Christmas party held on Christmas Eve, with John McClane attempting to deliver Christmas presents to his family at Christmas. I've made my point. Your next question. What is unusual about the people who live in the capital of the island of Montserrat?
They don't live there because it's destroyed by a volcano.
You're good. You've come to the right show. There are no people in the capital of Montserrat. None whatsoever. It is Plymouth. There is absolutely nothing going on in Plymouth. And that's as true in Montserrat as it is in Devon. The reason being is this young man has correctly identified that the 1995 series of eruptions of Soufriere Hills that rendered the city uninhabitable. Montserrat is the only political territory in the world whose capital is a ghost town. Nothing but a ghost town. Your next question about capitals, which two national capital cities lie nearest to each other? And it's not Rome and the Vatican, that doesn't count. Madam, you got it right. The answer is the capitals of the Democratic Republic of Congo and the Republic of Congo, Kinshasa and Brazzaville. There's literally only 1 mile separating the two cities across the River Congo. Kinshasa, as you may know, is perhaps most famous for being the location of the rumble in the jungle. And Brazzaville is perhaps most famous for being 1 mile away from the rumble in the jungle. Brazzaville is named after an Italian-born French explorer called Pierre de Brazza, who somehow managed to be all three of friendly, charming and peaceful while exploring Africa. For that reason, Brazzaville is the only African capital city to still be named after a colonial figure. It can be done. Kinshasa is now one of the most populous cities in the world and has overtaken Paris as the most populous Francophone urban area. And by Francophone, I mean French-speaking and not a device used to order the bombing of Guernica. Too soon. Before we move on to our last few questions, your last chance to ask me some questions.
In the American version of the board game Monopoly, which is the most expensive property?
Oh, my brain's going. Is it Boardwalk?
It is. Well done.
We're going to end this episode on facts about rivers, major rivers, in fact. The first question is one that I use in pub quizzes a lot. What is the longest river to flow into the Mediterranean Sea?
Nile.
Very quick, the Nile. It's not a European river at all. It is the River Nile. As we all know, the PR teams for the River Nile and River Amazon have fought long and hard for the title of the world's longest river. Turns out it's the Nile, on account of being longer. Somehow, that's just how facts work. I also suggest the Nile has the upper hand on most of the PR battles, not least because in 2019 in Cairo, across the River Nile, the world's widest suspension bridge was opened. Can anyone tell me how wide the Amazon's widest bridge is?
There isn't one.
There isn't one. There are no bridges across the second longest river in the world. That is 4,345 miles of no road or rail crossings whatsoever. There are two main reasons for this. First of all, the swelling of the Amazon during the rainy seasons is thought to be too dangerous to consider the construction of bridges. But secondly, and this is one of my favourite facts, at no point during the 4,000 miles of the Amazon are there two places on either side considered worth connecting to each other. There's a big lesson to be learned there. There's literally no point in building a bridge just for the sake of it. Ireland and Scotland are doing just fine as they are. And now with your last question. Having travelled all around the world this evening, we return to the very city where this recording is taking place, London. How did the creation of the world's deepest dam have a long-term effect on the River Thames?
Widened it?
You'll have to tell me where that dam is if you think it widened the Thames. If I told you that the world's deepest dam is on the Colorado River, on the border between California and Arizona, you'd of course know its name. The Hoover Dam is not on the border with California and is not the deepest dam in the world. It's another example of a geographical feature with very good PR team. The world's deepest dam, and indeed the only dam in the world that lies more underwater than above it, is further downstream on the Colorado, opened 2 years later than the Hoover Dam in 1938, and is called the Parker Dam. And in the same way that tourists flock to the Hoover Dam to see not just the impressive engineering, but the artificial Lake Mead, tourists have also been visiting the Parker Dam for many years. Because of its own artificial reservoir, anyone know the name? Lake Havasu, named for the Mojave word for blue. I'd like to think that many of us know why Lake Havasu is famous.
London Bridge.
In 1971, it became the new home of what had been the old London Bridge. What is less known is, how did this happen? It turns out that an entrepreneur called Robert McCulloch, having been a dominant figure in the United States chainsaw market in the mid-20th century, decided to branch out into outboard motors and needed somewhere to test them. On discovering Lake Havasu, he decided to buy land to found a namesake city there in order to establish his factories. He also wanted the city to be a popular tourist destination. So, as nothing more than a gimmick, he went over to London and calmly bought the gradually subsiding London Bridge at auction. Contrary to what you may have heard, he didn't think he was buying Tower Bridge. He knew exactly what he was buying. But the transfer, stone by stone, of the old London Bridge to an artificial reservoir on the border of Arizona and California is not only one of the most peculiar stories of the 20th century, not least because it results from nothing more than the vanity of a chainsaw and outboard motor salesman, but it's also a complex operation not without its risks. It was outlined in a film that we've all seen, I think, called A Bridge Across Time. It was released in 1985 and starred David Hasselhoff as a policeman investigating a series of murders in Lake Havasu City. Now, don't get me wrong, as far as we know, these murders were entirely fictional. I think the clue is the identity of the murderer in the film. Anyone? How would Jack the Ripper possibly be a murderer in a series of murders at Lake Havasu on the California-Arizona border? That is literally the stupidest answer I've ever heard in my life. Not least because it's correct. It was indeed the soul of the long-dead Jack the Ripper transported to Arizona inside one of the stones of London Bridge. This makes no sense whatsoever. This film was made in 1985. How could it be possible that David Hasselhoff, 3 years into Knight Rider, didn't have any choice of what film he got to star in? So I hope you enjoyed our quiz trip round the world. You've enjoyed discovering that Ingrid Bergman's daughter named Big Mo from EastEnders. You found out that 13 countries on the equator are quite difficult to recite in order. You found out that the Tahitians are much better than the French at recognising a woman when they see one. But most importantly, you've learned that the Amazon is actually a bit rubbish and the Nile is a better river and a longer river than the Amazon. Thank you for listening. Good night. Thank you. Paul Sinha's Perfect Pub Quiz is presented and written by me, Paul Sinha, with additional material by Oliver Levy and additional questions by the audience. The producer was Ed Morrish, and it was a Lead Mojo production for BBC Radio 4.
And next week's Paul's questions will be all based around four-letter words. Meanwhile...
Drift away with the sleeping forecast. A gentle mix of ambient music and the restful sounds of Radio 4's shipping forecast.
Fourth, tide, bogger, fisher, German bite, humber, south or southwest.
Handcrafted to soothe your soul. The sleeping forecast. Listen on BBC Sounds.